Everyone, I'm sorry for the quality of the audio on my side because really I'm here on vacation. I'm trying hard, but the birds are singing, the weather is good and people are around. So yeah.
It's so bad that it's warm and birds are singing and people are happy talking. Like, it's so terrible.
Okay, they're leaving. Sorry. Thank you. Up until now, I'm still, you know, very often deciding and thinking about it. And then my wife is like, really, Michael, for this? I mean, seriously? And she's like, you know, it's cold shower. Like, yeah, you're right. I just spent this and I buy myself peace of mind. But of course, I'm the best person to check my email. You know, the way I check my email, man, I mean, nobody checks email like me. You know what I'm saying? Especially my email. I mean, this time we took our kid because the kid is in the belly because, you know, she's in beta. She's on the way to be released in July. Hello, Raju from sunny Italy.
Yeah, I heard you had a run around the country today.
Yesterday. Yesterday I ran around the whole country, you know, in one day. Actually, in 30-something minutes. It was...
That's impressive.
Yeah, I think, you know, I should be the official, you know, road runner or something, you know? Mm. Because I ran around Vatican country. And, you know...
Yeah, that's less impressive.
Yeah, I know, but it still counts. It was fun, you know? We'll dive more about that. I mean, we'll talk more about that a little bit later. But I just like this active form of sightseeing, you know? I mean, I ran around the country of Vatican, and I ran around Colosseum, I ran around Circus Maximus in Rome. So, like, when you run around these, you know, monuments, these history landmarks, I don't know, you feel special, you know? You feel like a gladiator, you know, or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know, for some reason, it's special, and I really like it, and I think it's a good idea always to pack, you know, the running gear, because you never know. And it was fun.
Very cool, very cool. Okay, so we had some topics we were going to talk about last week, but we didn't have time. And I don't actually remember most of the topics we were going to move to today, but there was one topic that that caught my attention. So I remember you mentioning, like back on our reunion in Sopot, you talked about... sort of buying yourself into focus. So the idea being that we were thinking about our strategy for like servers, and like the natural reaction for me and for many people was like, I mean, yeah, like let's always continue what we're doing now. Let's keep maintaining our own servers, right? Let's all just do it this way because it's cheapest. You know, like,
yeah.
Like we are capable of doing that, so why not do this? It's just like, I didn't even think too much about it. It just seemed clear that this is the way to go. But you made me realize, like, you said that, like, guys, like, don't worry about the difference in price. Because, like, yeah, we would pay, you know, a few times more, probably, if we went to a more like managed server thing, like with AWS or one of those other things where you just use someone else's infrastructure and just like put your stuff on top of that. But like, yeah, you don't have to worry about some things, but we can do it. So why pay a few times extra? But actually, even though it is in relative terms expensive because it's a few times more expensive, it actually doesn't matter because you know what, actually our salaries are what costs the most. Like your biggest cost in running Nosby isn't servers, like it's salaries, right?
Yeah, totally.
So it doesn't often make sense to try to be like too frugal, especially in like company contexts, because oftentimes it when you factor in the price of your work, it turns out that even if you can do it, it makes no sense financially, and like that's the first level of it. But the second thing is I realized like we talked a lot about focus, about being really brutal when we have to, about where we focus our attention and effort, because it's very limited.
Exactly.
And focus is something that's like really hard to capture and measure. But like, you know, there's a saying that you can't buy money with happiness, but I guess you probably can buy some focus, with money, when you can pay someone else to do something for you that you no longer have to worry about. And it's like super obvious and stupid when I say it out loud, because like that's like how everything works. Like you don't make your own chairs. We specialize and we pay others to make products and services for us. But I think especially for us, like knowing that there are a lot of things we can do and do as well or even better than others, we want to do everything on our own, even though we don't have to. And we can actually, like, we can narrow our focus on things that actually matter and pay some money for someone else to do the things that don't matter for us.
Yeah, and especially, it's also a question of outsourcing, you know, what you should outsource and what you shouldn't, you know, what you mustn't. And, because there was like this big trend of outsourcing everything and just focusing on your core business. But then, you know, define your core business. I mean, what really makes you unique? And sometimes the answer is very easy, but sometimes it's not. And we always struggle with this. For example, when we create like our internal apps, like that help us do something, right? And whether we should, use our team's salaries and time to actually build something, or just hire it from somebody. Like Nozbe is our core product. This is what we do. And if we can find infrastructure that can help us, maintain it, then we are not. Our core business is not building servers, it's not hiring servers, having sysadmins, having people who manage all our infrastructure. And okay, if we had the scale of Facebook, then it's a different thing, or like recently there was like Dropbox totally moved from AWS or something like that. I don't remember, but there were like these situations when it starts to matter. But in our case, as you said, we should focus our time on building the best product we can build, and the more we can outsource, but of course, having all the backups, having all the infrastructure really well, reliable. But if we can really outsource this most of this infrastructure to experts, and link the experts together so that really we have a very foolproof infrastructure,
right?
And let them maintain it, let them keep the computers running and all these things running, if we can get this, then why should we bother about RAM of our servers or things like that, and that's the thing. And right now, as we keep building our company and as we keep growing, we also have to ask these questions: whether some of our internal apps should be further maintained or developed, or whether we should totally outsource them. Get some apps that we pay a few hundred dollars a month for an app that helps us internally. And it's still a lot cheaper than hiring a person to do the same work,
Right.
And that's why at this scale that we are, we can buy happiness, our happiness, with money, and many points. But of course, there are some situations where we decide otherwise. Like for example, our payment system is totally custom built, and it's custom built because there are lots of things that are just totally designed for only our app, and the way we bill, the way we charge, they are designed for our app. And for example, these things, we also recently we were talking about this with Tom, and we decided not to outsource it, not because there are some off the shelf solutions, but we it's our thing. This is the thing. Also, it's very important that we bill our customers correctly, and that we don't depend too much on external factors, because when it comes to money, you don't want to be screwing up with people's money. So you're totally right. I mean, but these are the questions when you can, you ask these questions at this point of our company. When you are starting off as a startup, very often you just have to work your way through. That's why you work so much, because you have to just build almost everything. But
right.
on the other hand, right now at this point in time, there are so many startups, you know, covering so many things that maybe instead of, you know, doing all this work, maybe you should just focus on, you know, like building Lego bricks, you know, I mean, like putting these things right. together.
Right. I remember you saying something like, hey, like we're still a small company, but we're not a tiny company anymore. We can afford more now. And like you reassured us about like being more comfortable with spending money when it's reasonable. Like when we see a need for a tool and it's like it's reasonably priced and we need it, then like just buy it, right? just buy it with the company credit card and like don't even like bother you know, thinking too much about it, because it's not worth it. Like it's better spend doing your work than spending time thinking and deciding whether you should buy a $20 or $30 tool or whatever, right?
Yeah, and especially the thing with buying you happiness. You know, if you get cool tools to get your work done, you know, you are happier at work. And that's also a factor, you know, and you
right.
just like, you know, we do with computers, like when we buy nice computers or nice iPhones or nice iPads, you know, we love using them and we feel happier working with these things. And the same with tools, the same with apps, the same with, you know, everything that helps us get our job done. We are about done and we shouldn't forget about it.
Right. And, you know, much of this is like really obvious when you talk about it out loud, but I think I had to sort of internalize it, because like I'm thinking about this difference between the top line and the bottom line, right? Like we often make fun of like VC backed startups, which are all about growth. So they're all about, you know, the growing the top line, but they're still losing money, right? Like they're going for, you know, making a product free forever and then deciding how to monetize it, right? And so we laugh at it, because it's like the bottom line is what matters at the end, like with the money you keep and not just growth when you keep losing money, right? And we take, you know, pride in that we're not this sort of product where we go free forever and then decide how to monetize our users with advertisement, right? But I think like exactly this perspective perhaps made me a bit blind to the fact that you can only optimize at the bottom line to reach the top line, right? Like you can be more frugal and like spend less money, but you have to consider the immeasurable element of focus, right? You can decrease your bottom line temporarily by spending your money on things you need, so that you can focus on things that really matter, growing your top line, right? Because the bottom line can only reach the top line, but the top line can grow forever, right? And like, yeah, we make fun of startups for having negative margins or something like that. But still, you have to consider if it's not actually worth it, you know, to spend more to be able to free your mind from worrying about things that are solved problems. Even if you can do just as good of a job or a better job, you know, you mentioned our payment system. Like, we of course use underneath our payment system that there is like this card processing infrastructure we use, but that's obvious, right? Like no one can do it on their own. But then like we decided that maybe like we're big enough and we have specific needs that we need this, our custom thing. But maybe a lot of people, a lot of companies don't, right? And,
yeah.
and they can buy their way into happiness and into more focus, so that they can focus on what differentiates them from everyone else, on the things that makes them unique and not the things that someone else already solved.
Like in the beginning of Nosby, we were using like off-the-shelf subscriptions from PayPal and from other companies, like just off-the-shelf.
Right.
So the thing is, that now we have our custom payment system. We still, you know, we still draw a line where we, for example, don't store credit card information. You know, we use a, you know, we use a more authorized, you know, third party that is connected to the bank that they use. They store the credit cards because, you know, they have all, you know, even more, even securer, like more demanding infrastructure for that. Because
right.
I don't think I would be able to sleep at night, you know, having all these credit cards on our servers. So, yeah. And this is where we draw the line. But this is the thing. You have to know where you draw the line about, you know, building your infrastructure, building your stuff, and going. Like, even in the beginning of Nozbe, I was using a more expensive server, but it was a managed server because I wasn't really a good, you know, Linux admin.
Right.
So, later, I was, you know, I was upgrading these managed servers. Then I got Tomasz, and Tomasz was helping me with management. But we still were all, on a very managed server. Now we are on like on a less managed infrastructure. But now we are at this point that we have this, you know, this fork in the road. Either we hire sysadmins and go with unmanaged servers, or we upgrade to even more managed servers, and then, you know, don't have to hire that many people to manage all this.
Right.
And but this is I think this is a good example. And but the other thing is, I think also we as Poles, people from Poland, you know, you know, from the with the history. I mean, in communism times, we had nothing, and we were used to being frugal, you know, to saving things, you know, saving money, saving, you know, not wasting money, you know, not spending so much money, you know, and I've been raised like this, I know, and I also have to learn this, you know, Radek, that at some point you just have to spend the money because it's just better, it's just easier like this. But I'm always, yeah. I'm always, you know, I'm up until now, I'm still, you know, very often deciding and thinking about it, and then my wife is like, "Really, Michael, for this? I mean, seriously?" And she's like, you know, it's cold shower. Like, yeah, you're right. I just spend this, and I buy myself peace of mind, and I can focus on, right. on where I should focus. You know, and buying this peace of mind is something. It is really, it's priceless.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And like I'm too young to remember the communist times in Poland.
But you're lucky.
It definitely affected me. Indirectly, right? Because it affected my parents, right? And
yes.
I learned from them. And also when I was young, like I come from no money, right? And now I and my family and my parents are, you know, more privileged. We can afford more. But I still was shaped with this in this environment where I just, you know, I couldn't afford to spend money on things unless I like absolutely needed them, right? And the luxuries, even the tiniest of luxuries, they had to, you had to, you know, they were rarities.
Yeah, totally.
Right. And you know, so I wanted to mention earlier, like you made me think about this when we were in Sopot, and then after. Like immediately after we came back, there was this episode of Exponent with Ben Thompson, and I'll link to it in the show. But they talked about exactly the same thing. Like there are now so many tools for startups, for small companies that they can like use them to offload their thinking from things that don't matter. We've got AWS for managed servers. Right, so many AWS services you can use so that you don't have to worry about managing servers yourselves. Like they talked about WeWork, which is this thing that you can like rent an office. And we talk about working without an office, but if you do want an office, then this is a great thing. Like imagine being in your San Francisco or whatever, and you don't have to like deal with landlords and rent long term. Like you can just rent a few desks from WeWork, right? And there are these things like Stripe and Square for managing like for taking payments, like and not just online. Like this is simple, but even if you want to like open your a physical store,
yeah, totally.
You can use that, right? Or like there was this very cool thing recently called Stripe Atlas, which is this service that you get, like they help you incorporate in the United States, open a business bank account in the United States, get tax and legal guidance, and of course accept payments with Stripe, right? And like, you can now, like, all these hard things that have nothing to do with what you do, you can have Stripe help you with that, right? Or tiny, I don't know, artists or whoever can use something like Gumroad to like sell your album or your whatever, right? There are so many of these tools, these services that 10 years ago didn't exist, and you would have to worry about those things yourself, and that made it much harder to start. And now you can not just have someone else do it, but you can like, there's also this difference between CapEx and OPEX, right? Like, you don't have to invest your money up front to get something like that. You can just, you know, pay as you go as you use those things, and it will just depend on how much you use it and how much, like, for example, how much you accept payments with Stripe, then this is how much money you'll pay Stripe, right? And but you don't have to like invest upfront in having some big company like sell you a product for you to be able to have this infrastructure, right? So this is really great for creators, for entrepreneurs, for people who have an idea and want to run with it. That they're just like, these days you can focus more on actually doing the thing that makes you unique instead of worrying about like silly things like that.
Yeah, and like, just think about it, you know, setting up a online shop, just go to Shopify and you have it, you know. Like, all these things that before were so complicated, you know, you need to hire a developer, you know, to help you with that and the other things. And I still, when I talk to people, when they are starting out, they ask me all these questions, you know, where should I get that? I'm like, just take the off the shelf, man. Just focus on your business. Don't focus on these things, because they will take you just too much time and you will learn things that you don't need to learn so much, you know?
Right.
It's like, you know, it's like for me also, the idea that I'm no longer an active developer in the company, right? I no longer develop anything. I mean, as far as software is concerned. And for me, I had to just, I mean, I still have some idea, you know, of what you're doing there in Nozbe Code, but it's okay for me, you know, to let go and not focus on that, because this is not my core business now. I mean, core business, my core job is not this right anymore. All right. And if it were, you would be laughing at me. So that's the thing. That's why. And this is within the company, and also like as a company, you know, you have to just be asking these questions and. You know, building as we discussed, you know, Lego is the best. I mean, building, you know, through Lego bricks, like, because I would imagine all these services as just Lego bricks, you know, building all this, you know, being your house, building your house, and then just really focusing on your core business, on the value where you are on. And also, for example, the same goes to assistant, right? Like, I have an assistant, and it also took me a while to just, you know, to get the grips, you know, to get accustomed of having somebody check my email for me. But of course I'm the best person to check my email, you know. I the way I check my email, man, I mean, nobody checks email like me, you know what I'm saying? Especially my email. But this is crazy, you know. I my job is not to answer email. My job is to be CEO of Nozbe and, you know, developing the best productivity tool I can. So letting my assistant handle my email and then giving my value where I can in these emails when my assistant, you know, tells me to, you know, it's a lot better and a lot more effective and a better use of my time. But I still see many CEOs, many people like struggling with this and complaining about the amount of email and not wanting to actually offload this for them.
Right.
Because they still think that they're the best at answering their email. I'm sure they are, but is it really their core job now? Really?
Right. And I mean, that now is like super privileged, but like that's the point. Like, every person's individual situation might be different, but it is a thing to consider seriously. Like, don't just like assume that it's best to be as frugal as possible. Sometimes it's actually best not to be as frugal as possible. And like, you have to consider it on your own situation, but maybe it is worth to spend money on X or hire person X or whatever, or use a service where that you could build yourself to like save time and focus in the long run.
Yeah, but there are like these virtual assistants now, and there are so many virtual assistants, you know, like, and you can hire somebody for 5 hours a week, you know, to handle some of your email or some of your things. So also, just speaking of the services, there are services like that, and they're really good, according to some people who use them.
Right.
So it's not that super privileged right now, but anyway, or like here when we are right now on my vacation in Rome, like I did most of the, you know, ordering myself, like ordered the hotel, ordered the hired the car, like all these things. But I did it here, but I usually, you know, ask first my assistants to do some research for me, and then I actually choose something. But and again, I'm using other services like Booking.com, like all these services, like they'd help me make my decision, you know, already.
Right.
Again, this is the kind of job that, like, whenever I have trouble getting a hotel, or you know, when it takes so much time of my time, I'm like, again, should I be doing this? Why couldn't just, right. You know, it's, you know, you keep asking these questions all the time. So, you know, there's never a good answer, but there's always an answer. And I think we should be asking ourselves these questions when we start doing something, you know, whether I'm just the best person to do this job.
Yeah. And me too. I've been thinking about it outside of work. Like recently, because of all my travels, I've been away a lot, and I haven't been keeping up with my gym training, right? And I've been like stressing out, like, oh man, like, man, it's like pretty expensive, and like it's like, wow, why don't I use it? Like, I felt bad for a moment, but then I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, in absolute terms, like, it is slightly more expensive than I would prefer, but like, okay, man, I can afford it. Like, it's like I'm paying them so that I get to use this resource for sports, for health, you know, in circumstances that I know I wouldn't do that just on my own at home. So it's like again, I'm paying them for a reason, and it's like not worth my time to worry too much about it. Like, just it's there for me to use, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I guess you wanted to talk something about you being in Rome.
Yeah, I wanted to share some of the tips. You know, speaking of, you know, spending money and stuff, I think it's a good segue, actually. So I have a few tips for you and for the listeners. First of all, why I'm here? Because as we, I think we discussed already, we are on a honeymoon with my wife. We are on a honeymoon, and we are celebrating 11 years of marriage. So the idea is that we try every year to go on our own without kids. This time we took our kid because the kid is in the belly, because, you know, she's in beta. She's on the way to be released in July. We are just two of us. And the idea is that, you know, my parents take care of our kids, and we are here on our own right now in Rome, enjoying our honeymoon. We try every year to do this because we want to focus on ourselves, and we want to just, you know, keep the marriage going, and, you know, also spend some time, you know, without worrying about the kids, about the school, about all these like day-to-day things. And many people, like when we talk about it, many people are like saying, yeah, but, you know, you can do it because your parents take care of them, you know, and normal people cannot do it, which is strange. Like, I see, well, talking to my friends, that, you know, it's a question of mindset. Just like we had another couple who said that they never went away, just two of them, after the kids were born. And we asked them why, and then, yeah, because the parents and whatnot. And then, like, when we talked to them about it, like, 2 months later, I got an SMS from the guy saying, you know, we are on our first weekend together away because we organized the, you know, taking care of our kids, and we are just two of us, and we're enjoying it. So anyway, I think this is really crucial for a marriage, to really to be able to get away, you know, from the kids, from everything, if you can, even for a few days, you know, even for one night, you know, just something like that. So anyway, this is why we are here. And I have an article about it. I'm going to link to this in the show notes. But now, organizing a travel like this, especially when you go to a place you haven't been to, because I have been to Rome. I mean, I was in Rome 20 years ago, so it doesn't count really. So my first tip is not to book a hotel for the whole stay, but just book a hotel for two nights if you can. I mean, it's hard when it's a very busy season, but usually when it's not a busy season, it's a good idea to book only for two or three days. Because first, even if the ratings of the hotel on Booking.com are fantastic, it might not be something that you expected. That's the first thing. And second thing, you might want to move around to be able to see the city from a different, from different perspectives. And this is actually what we did. So first we were stayed three nights in one place, and then we moved for other three nights to a different place. So the first time we're closer to Colosseum, and the second time we're closer to Vatican. And it's really cool, because this way you really don't have to travel, so much. You don't lose time with public transport. You just walk around, the places you want to see. So so there's the and of course you can do it if you travel light. Me and my wife, we travel only with carry-on luggage, right now I'm in a shopping center, so I don't know about the carry-on luggage after that, but up to this point we just had carry-on luggage with us.
Yeah, it's a beginner's mistake to have more stuff than what can fit in carry-on luggage in an airplane. It's just it's so much easier on so many levels to just have like one bag, one small suitcase or a backpack with you. It's so much easier to travel, and especially on airports, it's the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, a few years ago when 37 Signals, now Basecamp, were organizing a conference, I went to Chicago to see them, and I made a mistake of actually having a checked-in luggage. I'm going for a week to Chicago. I mean, seriously. I mean, and I'm just one guy. Why would I need a luggage? But, I had this beginner's mindset there. And I lost it. I mean, they lost my luggage. They lost it. I got it back.
That happens too.
I got it back 3 months later, So when I arrived in Chicago, all I had was my laptop and a few items, and I had to actually buy everything, to be able to survive a week in Chicago. So not a good idea. That's why carry-on luggage is the way to go if you go on a short vacation without kids.
If you try hard enough, you can pack for much longer this way. When I've been in US 2 years ago, I've been for 2.5 weeks, and I still fitted everything in a small carry-on suitcase and in my backpack. So that's what I could bring on board on an airplane, and it was a long flight, so I could for free have a big suitcase, but even though it was hard to fit everything, it was still better this way.
Yeah, totally. No, and I think we have a good segue to your topic. So for example, the only thing that is still...
Which one?
We'll see. So the only thing that that is annoying about traveling is hiring cars. Because still, unlike travel, which is right now very well regulated, so for example, even the cheap airlines like Ryanair, my favorite airline, tell you exactly how much you're going to pay when you order the flight. Before that, they used to be really scummy, telling you the price of the ticket, but then they would add your surcharge or whatever, like other fees and whatnot. And you would be totally, you would pay something totally different. The car rental companies are not like that. They are scummy, like all of them, like Avis, Hertz, all of them, like even the biggest ones. Like they let you hire a car, but then I know already that I'm not going to pay what they say that I'm going to pay, because they will ask me if I would want to upgrade to better insurance. Actually the college damage waiver, and then they will ask me if I have to pay. I want to pay for a second passenger, and they will ask them about other things. So I know already that when you hire a car, you will have to pay $30 a day more than you think you would want to pay. But it's fine. I mean, I'm used to it, but I just don't like it. And I think they should. I mean, still, I mean, there are some companies like Car2Go, like other companies that are trying to be more transparent and better with transportation. So I think really there is still a lot to be done about, you know, car hires and about transportation. That's why I'm hopeful for the future that these coming companies that are still, thanks to them, I'm renting the car here and I can, you know, use the car. I just don't like the experience. I still think, you know, this should be done better, but, you know, in case you're traveling, just make sure, like, just, you know, come to terms with the fact that you're going to pay more for car hire than you initially thought, and with these expectations, right, you know, you're fine, as I am now, but many people are not, and that's the thing. So that's the transportation corner, and I think we have more about that.
Yeah, so today we have not just a Tesla corner, a space exploration corner. No, we have an Elon Musk corner.
Exactly.
So what do you think about the Model 3?
Wow. I mean, I think like with the Model 3, so about the car, it's a nice car and it looks really cool. But what I was blown away was the reception of the car.
Right.
You know, I mean, the fact that you know, 100,000 people ordered the car, put up the initial, you know, pre-order.
Reservation.
For the car before actually seeing it. You know, yeah. the whole idea of a great Tesla kind of car for $35,000, you know, dollars,
right,
was so appealing that people just, you know, blindly bought this. And for me, it's just mind-blowing.
So wait, you're saying that normally you'd have, you know, hundreds of people lining up to an Apple store to pay $1,000 for a new iPhone or iPad, and now Tesla had what's only Apple has, which is, you know, hundreds of people lining up before their stores to pay $1,000 for a reservation with the intention of paying $35,000+ more on a product they haven't seen and they won't get until 2 years from now.
At least.
Crazy.
Yeah, this is mind-boggling, but I can totally understand that because we talked about it. I mean, we are just blown away by what they did, but for me, the most important, you know, aspect of the Model 3 reveal was the whole thing about the Gigafactory. So about the fact,
yes,
that actually Tesla right now is the only car maker with this Gigafactory of the little lithium-ion batteries that will be able to produce mass production electric car. Other automakers should be really worried by now. They are, I think, the other automakers are having right now the BlackBerry versus iPhone moment right now. And if they're not, they should be.
Yeah, and Tesla is actually selling for a few car makers and their small scale car models. They're like battery and engine technology, right? Like they're producing and selling that to others because they already do that. And they're good at it, and like, yeah, this is the biggest question of Model 3, and Horace and Ben on Exponent and on Critical Path talked much more about it, but the biggest challenge with Model 3 is actually producing it on a large scale and at such a cost that they could actually sell it beginning at $35,000. Right.
Yeah, but the best part was that, you know, until now, Tesla and Elon Musk, they were although the Model S was selling so well, and although Model S is already, you know, eating on the premium sedans segment, still it was perceived as this, you know, niche player. You know, it doesn't count, with just a few cars sold, no problem. They're just, you know, this niche player, and then suddenly you have, like, within I think a week they had 300,000, you know, orders,
right,
of Tesla Model 3. Suddenly people are opening their eyes.
Well, not orders, but reservations, and they're cancelable, so, you know, people can still get their money back if they decide that they're not going to go with it after all, but still they still sold something like 350,000 reservations. So they already made $350 million on reservations alone on the product that won't be on the market until 2018, right? So this is pretty remarkable. And in general, like, we'll have to wait and see how this car goes. And there's a lot of details we don't know. But It seems like from all the basic stuff they have showed us and just how it looks and the weird interior with like looking super from the future, that was all super cool. And the 35K price is significant because it's half as much as a Model S, right? So like it won't be a cheap car, but it will suddenly become like a lot more affordable to like it's going to be like more than an order of magnitude more cars that they're going to sell this way than a Model S or a Model X. So that's exciting.
Yeah, and if you think about it, you know, Tesla was preparing for this. I mean, by building this gigafactory, by preparing all these superchargers and having all this network of superchargers, they were, you know, staging this. They were waiting for this moment, and it was very nicely done in the reveal. Like, we had the Roadster for you crazy people, then we had the Model S for you less crazy people, then we have the Model X for still crazy people, and now we have the Model 3 for everyone else. And
right.
It was really well done. But apart from that, really, is the superchargers, the gigafactory. They have all these elements in place now, and they're way ahead of other car makers. And if somebody can argue that this is not the future, I mean, this is the future, man. I mean, people have been waiting for this, and they voted with their wallet, which is really dangerous for everyone else.
Right, and they could still fail.
Of course they could.
They could still run out of money. Like there is no promise that 100% sure that they will win. Like others can make other companies can make electric cars, and no one is signing up for electric cars because they're electric. Like, people are only signing up for Teslas because they're Teslas, right? And so others could reproduce the supercharger station. Like, there's a lot of ways in which other companies could undercut Tesla, and also on price and scale. And, you know, there's a lot of ways in which Tesla could still fail. But so far, they've done everything right. And, they're always, like, late with their products.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I expect Model 3 to be not late 2017, but 2018.
Late 2018.
Like, there will be a lot of growing pains, but still, so far so good, and so far, even if late, they have delivered, and like, despite being on the brink of bankruptcy already, they have been pretty successful so far. And but, you know, they keep losing money at the moment. They're not profitable yet. So Model 3 is the jump that's very hard to do. But if they're successful with this, then wow, it's going to be great.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like the moment iPhone launched. You know, iPhone redefined what a modern phone should look like. You know, and when they did that, there were lots of people skeptical about it. You know, people being, you know, saying that iPhone is just a toy, that, you know, it won't sell in the mass market, but it defined how the phone looked like. I mean, if you just look at any smartphone right now, it just looks like an iPhone, really. I mean, the screen and everything, like all the basics, right? I mean, they just defined it. Although there were other people trying to build a smartphone in, you know, lots of clunky ways. And it's the same with a modern car. Tesla, with Model S already, they defined how a modern car should look like. You know, no combustion engine, full electric drivetrain. The battery is on the bottom to have the best steering possible. And now they're doing this with mass market Model 3. And I'm sure that, you know, that other car makers will follow. This is not just about an electric car. This is how a modern car should look like.
Right.
You know, a car for the 21st century. And they defined it, and they are, you know, they're going through with this, and it's amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of differences between iPhone and Tesla. In so many ways, there are different industries, different products, etc. But there are big similarities, and I think that even if Tesla fails, even if the company collapses, runs out of money, whatever, I think they already made an impact by showing everyone, like, hey, this can be done, and look how much better it is, and how, like, look, this is the future. There are so many parts about a Tesla that will be replicated by everyone else, right? So I think even if Tesla failed, it would take a while, but they already made the impact.
Yeah, totally. And that's the thing. They showed like that the car can be, you know, done in a different way and in a new way. And yeah, and they already have their mark there. So really, way to go for Tesla. I'm really, really happy about the Model 3 and everything they're doing.
More news from the Elon Musk corner. What a great week for Musk. He presented the Model 3 and now on SpaceX front, there was a big thing. It was a fourth launch after the rapid unscheduled disassembly last year. The first Dragon capsule ISS resupply mission since then, and they attempted the fifth landing on a barge. Some 300 kilometers from shore, and they succeeded. It was the second successful landing and the first successful landing on the barge, which is amazing. Like it just like this was the science fiction of the 50s and 60s. Like there was this great gif comparing, you know, the science fiction movies from the 60s, and now this actually happened, and it's like a great feat of engineering. The barge is tiny compared to the rocket. Like you really have to land just in the center of it. You don't have a lot of margin for error.
Not really.
And this is significant because even though they already succeeded with landing on land, there are a lot of missions for which this is impossible because it takes a lot of fuel, a lot of energy to reverse and go back all the way to the launch site, right? But with a barge, you can put a barge down range at the path of the rocket as it ballistically re-enters, right? So it takes a lot less energy to be able to land on a barge than on land. So they can now do what is the source of gold in the industry, which is commercial geostationary orbit missions for like communication satellites, right? And they can conceivably recover a rocket from that. So this is super cool, and I'll put some link in the show notes. But just today before we recorded, the barge came back to Cape Canaveral.
Yeah.
And they will clean it, and then they will do like 10 test firing tests, just holding down the rocket to see if everything looks good. And if everything does look good, then in June or July, they could relaunch it, which would be a first. And
yeah,
there was never in the history of everything an orbital rocket that was recovered and relaunched. So this is very exciting.
Yeah, this is really, it looks obvious now, but when you think about it, this is amazing. You know, this is amazing. And just as we discussed, you know, now we take it for granted that when an aeroplane, you know, lands in a different country, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't, it's not being moved to trash, you know,
right.
It's being reused. But, you know, but with the rocket science, it's really rocket science. I mean, up until now, it wasn't possible. Now it is fantastic.
All right, so we haven't done this in a while, so it's time for a weekly kind of weigh-in. How are you doing? You're back to normal. How are you with your weight?
So I am on my vacation. I don't have a scale here, and I eat pasta and pizza every day. So really, I'm sure I'm doing fantastic. On the other hand, I'm doing from 15 up to 20,000 steps every day just walking. So I might be burning some of it. I don't know. But
yeah.
But you know, we'll see in a week when I come back home.
True. And are you still doing every day your morning routine?
Not on vacation, no.
Okay. Right. So for me, the past few weeks were hard because of all the traveling, 3 weeks in a row, and it didn't help. Like I was at 72 even, or on high 71 kilogram marks. But for the last week, the average for last week has been 70.7, which is
nice.
not the magic number, but it's essentially back to normal. So this is great.
No, this is great. This is really good. On my morning routine front, now because I'm on vacation, it's not happening. But before the vacation and after, when I come back, it should be really easy because I actually, I don't know if I mentioned it, but I actually created a workflow in a workflow app to actually for my morning routine. I'm going to share it in the future. I'm going to discuss it in the future on this podcast. But it a little bit gamifies my morning routine and my evening routine. And I really like it. I'm going to talk more about it, in the future episodes, but it's really fun.
Nice teaser.
Yep.